The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Well, good morning. Yeah, 3 decades. Well, let's consider this passage out of 1 Corinthians. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be dominated by anything. We are told that there is freedom in Christ, that God's desire for us is that we live in freedom. And yet we find ourselves so often dominated, seemingly out of control, seemingly powerless, seemingly a slave to something or some activity. Paul writes, I will not be dominated by anything. Let us have that as our goal. I'd like to tell you a story about a man I met about 15 years ago. And I will call him Jason, for that is not his name. But Jason was a relatively young man, early 30s or mid-30s when I met him. He was married, had a couple of, three children actually, that were school age, just at the beginning of school age. And he had become a Christian during his college years, so he'd been a Christian at this point about 12 years or so. I met Jason following the loss of his job. He had lost his job because he had charged gambling and prostitution on the company credit card. When they took his laptop back, they found it was full of porn. The reason he had to use the company credit card was because his credit cards were all maxed out and he could not get further credit. His house had been mortgaged, second mortgage to the limit. He could not get cash out of that anymore. He had nothing left. He had opened charge accounts in his children's name and maxed those out. I met him when he could not see a way out. As we talked, he described that he drank regularly, daily, morning, noon, and night, but it's Wisconsin, come on. Used marijuana regularly, just a couple of hits a day, though, to take the edge off, to calm himself. Had been using porn since he found his dad's stash in junior high, and, well, sort of like everybody does, although in recent years it had escalated to chat rooms, to phone sex, to meeting with people, to prostitutes, and that was part of what was on the charge card when the company found out. As he described his life to me, you could see just this immense pain, and he continually was saying things like, how could this have happened to me? How could have I gotten here? How is this even possible? After becoming a Christian, he became involved in men's ministry at his church. He had an accountability partner. He was in regular men's Bible studies. He met guys for breakfast. And he was thinking, well, all these things are going to keep me safe. But what he recognized only when he stopped and looked back is, I've been lying to my accountability partner. I've been lying to the guys I have breakfast with. I've been lying to me. I can't stand where I'm at. I've been lying to God. That just showing up, as my father once said to one of my brothers, they don't graduate you for attendance. Just showing up, just attending, wasn't enough. And he was asking, what can I do? How do I make sense out of this? Well, one of the things that I recognized is Jason was very sincere. He was in horror at what had happened with his life. His wife asked him to move out. The second time she asked, she actually was willing to pack for him and put his things outside as a convenience. And he moved in with his parents for a couple of years. Humiliating. The losses for him were just overwhelming. He was caught up in multiple addictions. He was just engulfed. Life was completely out of control. In debt, broke, credit ruined, family blown apart. And he found out he was in poor health. Not only had he contracted an STD, he had not been eating well, multiple problems. One might say, wow, that's pretty extreme. Yes and no. For when we become a slave to something, we stop recognizing how it's impacting us. We stop recognizing how we are deteriorating. We're falling apart. I'm going to use this term addiction, and it's pretty common in our culture right now. We're addicted to football. We're addicted to Super Bowl commercials. What am I referring to? I'm going to use the term addiction to refer to a destructive relationship with any mood-altering substance or activity. A destructive relationship with any mood-altering substance or activity. And I just remembered I have a handout for you. It's a pretty thorough handout, hoping that you'll be able to have the information on the sheet, not need to take notes here if you don't want to. But this idea of a mood-altering substance or mood-altering activity that is destructive. Now, what do we see with addictions? Well, one of the things we see early is impaired self-control, feeling out of control, doing things I don't intend to do, doing things that are harmful to me, and I say I won't do it again, and I do it. Social impairment, broken relationships. Jason lost his wife for several years, lost regular contact with his children, lost his work friendships, lost a lot of relationships. During addiction, we engage in risky behavior patterns. We do things we wouldn't do otherwise. We don't think of the consequences. He would never have charged on the company credit card until he had so lost control that was the option he saw, and without thinking of the consequences, he took it. With an addiction, we develop tolerance. We develop the need for more intensity or more of something just to get the same effect. When he was relatively young with porn, just looking at semi-nude or nude pictures on a page was sort of over the top for him. But as he moved further and further into that, looking for multiple pictures, hundreds of pictures in a brief period of time, then videos, and then different arrangements, et cetera, needing more intensity, needing more volume, needing more of something to get the same effect. We develop tolerance. And then when it's withdrawn, the body reacts, sometimes reacts very violently, sometimes puts the body in great danger. The body has become accustomed to the substance, the activity, how that impacts the hormones and the neurological activity in the brain. When the activity or the substance is withdrawn, the body is in great chaos. And the individual may feel extremely sick. They may shake and have tremors and be throwing up and having nightmares, even reality, loss of reality contact, incredible cravings. They can be very sick, even life-threatening. Now, we can be addicted to about anything. Humans are really good at developing addictions. This we've mastered. We can develop addictions to chemicals, chemicals that alter our mood. It may alter our mood by calming us. It may alter our mood by increasing our arousal. But it changes how we emotionally feel. And we find whatever state the chemical offers us, we find that addresses our pain problem, or it provides us comfort. Or we can also become addicted to activities. We can become addicted to activities like excessive exercise, porn, sex behaviors. We can become addicted to shopping. We can become addicted to gaming. We can become addicted to gambling. Some of us are familiar with this kind of device. This is an ideal ideal addictive product. This phone connects me to the entire world, and it's got a little screen that only I can see. Nobody else can see it, and it's always available, and almost anywhere in the world, it will connect me. It gives me the sense that I'm not alone. It gives me the sense of something meaningful. We can be addicted to almost anything. Why are we so vulnerable for this? The function of addiction is to change our response to the pain we're experiencing. Addiction has a function. If it didn't, it would drop off. All of us, even my little grandchild, has pain in their life, and we need to comfort, manage, do something with this pain. We attempt to respond to the pain, to numb it, or to soothe it, or calm it, or resolve it, or get away from it somehow. And what the objects of addiction offer us is a temporary escape, sedation, comfort. It gives us a moment away, and the emotional experience inside us changes for that little bit of time. That's really rewarding. That's wonderful. And then it doesn't do it anymore. So I do again. I do it again. I get that relief. I get that sedation. I get that escape. And then it doesn't wears off. I do it again. So I take another drink. I take another hit. I watch another series of pictures. Whatever activity I'm in, addictions function to help us manage pain in our life. And those things that alter our mood or alter our emotional state are those things in which we are vulnerable to become addicted to. Now, while we're doing this, we're often not thinking necessarily of pain. It might be agitation, distress, uncomfortableness, boredom. Oh, that's a biggie. Got to get away. Seeking something to change how I'm feeling inside. So the question might arise, though, why do we have so much pain? Now, if I fall over here and crack my knee and it hurts, okay, we can understand that. You had an injury. But why do we have this inner pain? It's very similar to the physical pain, but it's on the inside. Pain of the heart, pain of the soul, pain of the mind. As a Christian, it's very important to recognize how we're designed. We are designed to love and be loved. We are designed to be known and to know other people. We're designed to be connected. And when we are connected, when we are experiencing being known and others knowing us, when we are experiencing loving others and being loved, the addictions drop out. They don't develop. When our basic needs made in the image of God are in place, we can manage those things to which we become addicted to. But things are not the way they ought to be. We were designed, it tells us in Genesis 2, for naked and not ashamed. Wow. Naked. I mean, physical naked, that's kind of enough. Well, let's back off that one for a moment. That's kind of embarrassing for a lot of us. But when we think about naked as no secrets, nothing to hide, nothing I'm ashamed of, openness, and the same for you. We are open together. I don't have to hide anything from you. You accept me as I am. I accept you as your. This is what we're designed for. This is how it ought to be. And this is how we would function our best. Made in God's image, we're designed to live naked and not ashamed. But we know that the world's a pretty dangerous place. We know that it isn't the way it ought to be. That things are not how they ought to be. That instead, if I reveal who I am, you may reject me, leave me, criticize me, make fun of me, use it later for your advantage to hurt me. It's a huge risk. but my need didn't change. Sin entering into the human experience didn't change my need. It changed, though, how I can try to meet my need. We've got to recognize that the design, how we are created, I'm created for naked and not ashamed. When I am not able to have that kind of connection I'm designed for, it is painful. We have an inner heart pain, a mind pain, a pain of the soul. We try to find relief from that pain. We try to find a way to comfort ourselves, to calm ourselves from that pain. I need the closeness with others. I need the closeness with God. I'm blocked. And all kinds of things block us. Now, we have historically thought of addictions not about my needs, but about the characteristics of other things. For example, we often think of addictions as a characteristic of the drug. So, you know, if a person uses heroin for a while, they will become addicted to heroin. And one of the reasons we think that way comes from some old research where they took rats and put them in a cage. One rat per cage. They had two water bottles. One water bottle was water. The second water bottle, water plus cocaine or water plus heroin. And what they saw the rats do, rat takes a little bit of the water, okay, takes a little bit of the cocaine water or the heroin water, takes a little bit more, takes a little bit more. After a little bit, is dead. Wow. So given the choice, rats will use drugs to death. So there must be, now the difference there is the cocaine or heroin. Well, a researcher was looking at this and it said, you know, there's a problem with that research. There's nothing else to do. This rat's bored out of his little rat skull. So what the researcher did is he built Rat Park. And Rat Park had mazes to run, had other rats to play with and do social things with and have all the sex they wanted. And the rat could climb and run and play. And they had two water bottles. One has water and one has water with cocaine or heroin. And they observed something very surprising here. When the needs of the little rat could be met in their life experience, the rats almost never drank from the cocaine or heroin water. They only drank from the regular water. And in all the research they did with this paradigm, no rats in Rat Park died. It wasn't the substance by itself. When the basic needs are not being met, we will seek, we and even a rat, will seek something to deal with the pain of those unmet needs. Now, we've seen this in naturalistic experience many times. We see that when people go to the hospital and have significant surgeries done, you know, grandma goes in, gets a hip replacement, grandma doesn't come out a junkie. Grandma goes in, gets her hip replacement, uses pure heroin-type medications, and she uses them for a little while, and almost everyone stops using them after a short period of time, and they're not addicted. Because the pain that was being treated, that is resolved as the body started to heal, and they can deal with the other pains of life okay. Or the Vietnam War was another natural experience. We had hundreds of thousands of guys in a place they didn't want to be, having people trying to kill them while they were ordered to kill people. And all, so many of them just didn't want to be there. And it was horrible. And 20% of them were using heroin towards the late 60s into the 70s. The anticipation was when these guys come back into the States, we're going to have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of heroin addicts. And what they found out of the 20% that were using heroin in Vietnam, 95% stopped as soon as they got to the States. Yes, some did continue, but 95% of the guys didn't use it anymore Because when they got to the equivalent of Rat Park, when they got to their home environment where they could meet their connection needs, their needs to love and be loved, to know and be known in a more functional way, they didn't need to deaden the pain anymore. Some, yes. 95%, no. It's not the substance. It's not the porn. It's not the gambling per se. It's my relationship with it. And we need to address how are we going to meet our deep needs directly, the God-designed needs in us, so that we do not develop an addictive pattern. Well, we will bond with anything. I showed you my cell phone. Almost any activity we can bond with, because our need for connection never goes away. Our need for naked and not ashamed, for belonging, for being known, never goes away. I can ignore it. I can push it away, but it's still there. We've got this dilemma, though, since the fall. On the one hand, I need love. I need to be known. On the other hand, it's dangerous. In order to be known by another person, I must be vulnerable. In order to be understood or to understand another person, in order to receive or to give, I must reveal myself. I must be vulnerable. And that takes risk. That could be hurtful. That we have these deep needs for connection. And when we're little, the only connection we can imagine is with a person. But there's a problem with connecting with another person. I need two things simultaneously. I need them to be available. Like right now, if I want to connect with my wife, it's not going to go well. Not here. But even when somebody's physically available, they're there with us. The other person, both people, need to be vulnerable. And so connecting with another person always requires being available, being vulnerable. As we mature, we can learn to connect with ourselves. We can meet that need by being honest, real, with who I am. The psalmist writes, search me, know me. As God searches me, I know me better. What is it like to be me? What do I believe? What do I feel? What do I think? What do I need? This is not selfish. This is being aware. God has entrusted one life for us to manage. Jesus has a couple parables about this. We are each entrusted with the life we have. And he's given us that life. We need to monitor it. It's like the dashboard of our car. Yeah, you can drive without it. You might get pulled over for speeding. You might find yourself out in nowhere running out of gas. If we're not monitoring, we are out of control. And we can at that point become dominated by anything. As we continue to grow, we can learn to connect with what's real. What is the truth? What's real, whether I accept it or not? A statement like God telling us, I will never leave you or forsake you. If that is a true statement, I'm not alone. And I won't be alone. And if my worst fear happens, the Creator and Sustainer, all-loving God, is still with me. That's going to be a calming effect on me. Connecting with what is true, what is real. Whether I like it or not, it is what it is. The fourth connection option that we have, connect with the person of God. And I label it this way because a lot of times we want to connect with thoughts about God, ideas of God, my personal theory of God. This might be theology, this might be true, might not be true. These are just ideas. I'm talking here about a relationship. A relationship with another being that is unique and separate from me, but that desires, wants to be in relationship with me. The connecting with the person of God is me revealing what it's like to be me, sharing my experience. I call my brother and I tell him what's going on. I talk to a buddy of mine at the office. I talk to my wife on the phone. I'm telling them what it's like to be me. I'm hearing what it's like to be them. Well, I can do the same with God, but I don't need to use a phone. Revealing myself. Many of the Psalms, take a look at those. God wanted us to have those. In many of the Psalms we see at the beginning, the pouring out of what it's like to be the writer. And some of it's not real pretty. Some of it's downright sarcastic. Frankly, those are some of my favorites. That sarcasm, that kind of biting, like, the dead can't worship you. What's going on here? As experiencing great pain in life. And then we see at the end of the psalm, God's response and the recognition of what is true. And there's no penalty for the first part of the psalm. In relating to the person of God, we are being real, revealing. We're working on being naked and not ashamed here with God. Our connection needs, God designed in us, every one of us have them, and we never get a vacation from them. They're always, always present. But I've been using a term here that is used in so many different ways that's pretty meaningless in our culture. I've been talking about love. I've said one of these deep needs we have that drives, when it's not met, that drives the addictions is we need to love and be loved. Well, we're told we love because He first loved us. God is the author, the source of love. And we see that with children, as we love these infants, you know, they're not really good for much at the beginning. They can't do any work. They take up a lot of time. They make horrible messes. They disturb sleep. It's a wonder we keep them. But we give to them. We love them. And over time, they start to respond to us. And that relationship can keep growing. To understand love, I think it's real helpful to kind of take apart the idea. Think of love as seeking and doing good for the loved one. Seeking and doing good for the loved one. We love because He first loved us. He has done good for us. He wants good for us. We want good for that infant. We seek good for that infant. Seeking and doing good for the loved one. Now, love comes from the lover. We love that baby even though it does nothing for us. It just sort of makes our life more complicated for 25, 30 years. It is a gift, undeserved, coming from the lover. Love cannot be earned. Love cannot be unearned. I can't disqualify myself from being loved because the lover is making the decision. Now, one of the things we're going to see, Jason, in his rebuilding his life, had to become a lover. And he was so surprised what that meant, to be a lover. Love comes from the lover. It's a gift that cannot be earned and cannot be unearned. So, here's our human condition. We need naked and not ashamed. We need connection, always. We need to love and be loved. And when that's disrupted, it's painful because there's this gap, this variance between how we're designed and how reality is. So we find ways to try to avoid the pain or to medicate, sedate the pain. And we can go back and forth, but the common variable there is the pain is still there. This is not our favorite reality here, but the truth is we need to go through the pain. And it's very interesting that as we look at the incarnate God, Christ went through the pain and had victory, even over death. He went through the pain. We see a common theme in Scripture is moving through the pain. Maybe most commonly, or for many of us most familiar, is in this 23rd Psalm. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Our need for comfort is legitimate. Scripture recognizes there is the pain and you need comfort. We're not supposed to be able to just buck it up, do it on our own. But notice what is going to happen here as this psalm continues. Comfort's going to be offered us because we need it. Prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. My deep needs for safety and love are going to be met. My enemies will not overcome me. My deep needs will be met. So as we look at how are we going to do this, we're going to say goodbye to ineffective ways to try to address the pain. And we're going to say hello to meeting the needs directly. It may sound really simple, but ultimately what we're looking at when we're addressing coming out of an addiction, when we're addressing how can I live and not be dominated by anything, is I can be realistic about how God has created me. I can accept that there is this pain and it is part of the human condition. I can recognize my needs can be met, but it might be different than I thought it was going to be. In Jason's journey, he found so many things were not the way he thought they would be. The more trouble he got into, the more he tried to control, the more he tried to control, the more denial, the more distortion, the more unrealistic he got, the more he anticipated being hated instead of loved. Well, all he was really seeking is I want to be known. I want to be close to others. I want to love. I want to be loved. I need to be connected. Well, on page 2 of the handout, I offer some suggestions here about how we do this. Address the needs directly. What is my problem? Well, ultimately, the problem is broken love. We can look at that originating some time ago, before I was born, with the fall, where how things are supposed to be were blown apart. And now we have to deal with this thing called sin, even though my needs haven't changed. It's just so much more complicated. Whose sin might be sin of mine? In Jason's example, he ran up the bills. He met with the prostitute. He used the substances. That's one piece of it. A second piece of it, though, is that every one of us in here has been impacted by the sins of others. The sins of others that we interact with and how their broken love has wounded us. The sins of ancestors. How people before us set up systems related in family structure. John was identifying a bit of that generational pattern. And their sins, not of my doing, have impacted me. Every one of us. And there's a third type for all of us. Humanity disconnected from God with the fall back in the garden. Is it a sin problem? Oh, in so many ways, yes. What are we going to do about it? Realize who we are. Meet our basic needs directly. So, in meeting our needs, we need to recognize not only do we have the broken love needs, But very often we've also been damaging our body in multiple ways. This chapter in 1 Corinthians here talks about the damage that happens to the body as we become a slave to something. Here they talk quite a bit about the sexual sins that we can become a slave to. But any of the addictive patterns are damaging and destroying to the body. One of the things that I strongly recommend when somebody decides, I want to break out of this, I do not want to live in bondage, get a medical eval. Find out how these patterns, even if you don't think they have, find out how they've impacted how your body's functioning. Get a medical eval. But that's not enough. We're much more than just a body. Our deep needs are for our connections. Manage these connection needs I described to you earlier. As I was talking about them, sometimes I'll joke with people, you know, we ought to like get these tattooed on the inside of our eyelid. And every time we blink, we remind ourselves, okay, what are my options for meeting my needs? God has entrusted this life to me. Where can I connect? Is it possible to connect with a safe other person? Can I recognize what it's like to be me right now and be straight with that? Can I recognize truth and embrace it and hold on to that even if it doesn't feel right at the moment? Can I share myself with the person of God? Can I receive from the person of God whatever God shares with me at this moment? I constantly assume a responsibility to care for my connection needs. Part of truth is sorting out what I am and I'm not responsible for. Part of truth is sorting out so that I can pick up my stuff. So I can be on my side of the street and be responsible for how I treat me, how I manage my life, and how I treat other people. Equally important is that I let go of what's not my stuff. I do not hold myself responsible for how other people treat me or other people treat other people or other people treat themselves. See, when I embrace responsibility for my stuff, that's my dignity. What I do matters. That's my personal power. When I release myself and hold somebody else responsible for their stuff, that's their dignity. What they do matters. That's my freedom. When we are trying to decrease our pain, this gets so messed up. We have a tendency to not accept responsibility for our own stuff, and we feel helpless. And we tend to take on responsibility to please other people or to make them happy, and we're out of control and helpless. Because nobody's got a remote control for anybody else, as much as we wish we had sometimes. That's theirs. Connecting with truth, separating what's mine, embrace it. What's not mine, release it. Another feature of how do we meet our needs directly is in this self-management, there's an acronym HALT. Some of you are probably familiar with it. There are times when we are quite vulnerable. There are times when the pain of our unmet needs can be great. When we're hungry, when we're angry, when we're lonely, and when we're tired. We need extra care when we're hungry, when we're angry, when we're lonely, and when we're tired. That's when we're in the most danger to act out. Being aware of that, I can plan. I carry protein bars with me because when I'm hungry, and when I'm low on protein, one, I tend to be more angry. But I also, at that point, just get agitated. If I meet that physical need for protein, I can manage my connection needs more effectively. But if I don't meet that physical need for protein, things start to come unraveled for us. We want to be mindful of how am I managing, caring for, this life God's given me. We can't do this alone. We are not designed to be alone. Recognize in Genesis 2, it is God that says it's not good for you to be alone. It wasn't Adam saying, God, you're pretty good, but this isn't working out for me. Apparently, Adam hadn't recognized yet. God designed us, not as lone wolves, but he refers to us as sheep. Sometimes I have kind of a little disappointment with that. You know, cheetah would be cool. Sheep, not so much. But sheep are a herd animal. And they benefit, they need to be together like us. I have never known anyone, and I've known a lot of people working through addictions, and I've never seen anyone be successful in coming out of the slavery of addiction, doing it on their own. I've seen a lot of people think they will, demand they will, think just meeting with me will be enough. You know, I'm good, but it doesn't work that way. I am not enough. They are not enough. We need community. We need one another. We need to not only know others, we need them to know us. And what we see here, the various groups, support groups, Celebrate Recovery, they've got a booth downstairs. Stop by it. They've got a great program in a lot of churches around the country now. The various 12 steps or 8-step groups, these are ways in which we work to meet the need of being known and knowing another, of having someone come alongside us that we can connect with, that safe other person that's going to get it. When I tell them I'm struggling with, fill in the blank, they'll say, yep, okay, I'm not surprised. Lightning didn't hit me when you said that. And now my connection need is starting to be met, just telling you and you accepting me. This is so important. Well, what do we do when someone that we love is caught up in the addiction? We treat them as we would treat ourselves. The scriptural mandate, both in the books of the law, Jesus reiterates it in Matthew 22 and other places, love others as you would love yourself. One rabbi identifies the Leviticus passage, love others for they are like you, love you for you are like others. That it's, we treat others as we would. So we want to address them in love, seek and do good. Sometimes that will disappoint them. That will not please them. We may need to say no because to say yes would not be good. It's never good to help another person destroy. It's not good to help another person sin. So we may disappoint them or even upset them. As we seek to do what is good, facilitating their ability to receive love. We're going to need to have our boundaries. We're going to need to know what our motivation is. We're going to need to take good care of ourselves in that process. Well, Jason worked with the things we just talked about. And for 2 years, he lived with his parents, well, his dad and stepmom. And then he and his wife started to talk. For a couple of years, they hardly had any contact at all. They did move to a new locale, some distance from here. They have restored a relationship. They do talk about it's our second marriage. Our first marriage kind of crashed and violently burned. It's gone. His children, now out of the house, his wife and Jason, both are involved in the Celebrate Recovery program in this other church where he's one of the leaders, and they both are quite involved with that. He still attends meetings about 3 times a week. He is a sponsor. He has a sponsor. He has mentored other men, and he has a mentor himself that he continues to work with. I spoke with him a couple of months ago, and I asked him, you know, what do you take away from that, from all of this journey? And he said that I didn't know I could love life or the Lord. I thought I had to find a way to be good enough. It wasn't a lack of knowledge that he had emotionally, that he could be known, he could share himself, and had that deep need to be connected. A researcher recently concluded, the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. We've got a couple of moments left. Questions, comments? Yeah. How do you get a medical evaluation? A general practitioner, you can just identify, I've been involved in whatever it is. I'd just like to have a general medical evaluation with some sensitivity to whatever I've been involved in. And they're trained to take it from there. Other questions, observations? Yes.
Dealing with people where their paradigms are just locked in no matter how much truth you get, you tell them that they believe to the fact that they're there and not moving out.
What do we do when there's people that they're very locked in their paradigms and no matter what truth we give them, they just don't modify it? This is where the boundaries of responsibility are so clear. I am responsible to treat them with love, to treat them well, no matter what they do. I am not called to participate in abuse, destruction. I'm not called to be part of the addictive pattern, whatever it might be. So as I live well, there's an invitation to come towards that. And I've seen this happen many times, but it takes a long time. A metaphor for that, imagine you and this other person, people, you're out in a boat. The boat sinks. You swim to shore. You're standing on ground. It's solid. They're flailing along out there in the water. You're saying, come on, it's safe over here. They're saying, come out here and be with me. But you remember your life-saving course that told you, if you swim out to somebody who's flailing around in the water, they will try to stand on your shoulders so they can breathe better, which puts you about 5 feet underwater. This isn't going to work. So we throw them a ring. They can grab that if they choose, and they can come towards truth. We stay solid inviting them towards what's real. Yeah.
So the outlook that I would have would be the man that just asked me that question would be pretty much like 1 Corinthians chapter 13?
Yes. 1 Corinthians 13, we're looking to act in love. It may please them. It may anger them. They may reject us. Nowhere in Scripture does it say, please others as I have pleased you. That's not what Jesus said. Love others as I have loved you. So the lover, I will be the lover, and I'll do the right inviting them to the shore. Yes, here in the front row.
Can you just talk about what is right and wrong accountability and maybe give us some guidelines for seeking accountability?
Good question about accountability. A couple thoughts on that as we wrap up. In accountability, we have no magic. There's nothing about having an accountability partner that brings truth to it. There must be a willingness to be vulnerable by both parties. So we need to intentionally choose, I will share with you those things I don't like about me, I don't feel comfortable about me, but you must share at an equal level. One guy said it's like the old Cold War. We can only be okay with each other if there's the potential for mutual destruction of each other. I need to know you as well as I let you know me. So we're going to need a safety for that. And here's how it can be safe to be that vulnerable with another man. We know we are both loved by the same creator and sustainer. We are both forgiven. That sin is sin. It's not a competition between us. For a lot of us guys, everything's a competition. But sin is sin. And then finally, to know we're not going to be abandoned. I won't quit on you as our Heavenly Father won't quit on me. that can greatly facilitate a safety. But we need to maintain that relationship, do the maintenance on it, staying vulnerable. It's so easy to be vulnerable and let that go. We have to talk about that kind of being open, not just assume it's happening. Well, thanks for letting me share this with you today.